our board has worked really well over a period of time to build appropriate fund balances to be able to weather financial challenges. And as we look, even though we have an uncertain future, we still have pretty good balances to be able to put forward a small risk and not riffing a bunch of people. Because the problem is, if you do that, you risk losing very good, high quality teachers. And to the extent that we can avoid that, we want to do that. And so rather than riff a number and potentially bring them back or try to bring them back in May, June, July, we went ahead and decided that we're not in a deficit reduction mode right now. And our population stays fairly stable. So we went with the minimum that we needed to do for planning for next year.
How do you assess risk? You mentioned relatively low risk based on what's coming out or not coming out of Springfield. What does risk mean in this case?
It'll mean that if we get bad news coming out of Springfield, meaning something like the funding formula changes, there is a shift of the pensions over to the districts, property tax freezes, anything that's going to limit or reduce our revenue streams, we have the ability to offset that with fund balances. Now, obviously, that's not something you can continue to do year after year after year. So if we had any one of those factors hit us, we would likely the following year have to look at the possibility of going into a deficit reduction plan.
What makes you think they won't hit you?
There isn't anything that makes me think that they won't hit us. Now, the one thing that has been constant from state government is public education, K-12, is a very high priority. And when you look at the only budget that's been in place is K-12 education, that at least demonstrates that commitment. But I'm not optimistic that we're going to have a future that is able to provide us with revenue increases to the extent that we truly need it. I am hopeful that we will see some leveling and hopefully some increases in the future, though.
Last year, even though there was no overall state budget, and still remains no state budget, K-12 was not a hostage to the negotiating process. There is a sign that this year it will be. How are you approaching that uncertainty?
Well, similar to what we've done in the past, we will gather the best data we hear out of Springfield. We'll pay close attention to what's going on. We will obviously communicate with our local legislators, but in the end, we'll take that information. We budget conservatively anyway, so meaning that we will look closer to the scenarios where we're not going to get what they may even be talking about, and then as time goes on, the likelihood of that may increase and you're better off than what you thought you were. But if they do get really bad, every school district will have to look at ways to continue to reduce their expenses, because this is not anything new. We've been doing that for the past several years, along with many of my colleagues.
Senate President John Cullerton has said he won't vote on Governor Rauner's K-12 budget proposal until analysis is done on how it affects school districts. And he, of course, the subtext there is the suspected $78 million cut for Chicago schools. The Democratic Party version of K-12 budget is now being vetted for impacts. What do you know about both packages and the impact on District 87 and Central Illinois districts?
Not a whole lot at this point. It's interesting to watch the political gamesmanships that are going on in Springfield, because we've, as superintendents, we've received letters now from the governor's office, from Cullerton's office, and from the education secretary's office, all of which are encouraging us to contact our local folks and support, you know, one or the other. It's making it seem as though we don't understand the gamesmanship, because right now you really have a political atmosphere where it boils down to basically two individuals who seem to be trenched in with no room for any collaboration or outcome that looks to compromise. And so We have not done analysis of either one of those. Obviously, if the governor's package were to pass with additional funding to education that fully funds the GSA, that's general state aid, that would be welcomed.
Usually, it is not in the best interest of school districts to engage in gamesmanship. You want to remain an honest broker focused on your mission and not favor one party or another. You're being asked to do that this year. Is this opening of this front something unprecedented in your experience?
Well, in my limited experience in the chair as superintendent, it is. And that's just 6 years. So I couldn't tell you if that has been done in past years. But I can tell you that some of what has been going on has been done in the past, meaning Cullerton and the ask for the analysis of how this is going to impact the school district, that's been done all the time when they're considering budgets. And the response to that from others is to almost state that that's not what's been done. And that to me seems a little illogical, but those kind of political battles go on and people don't really realize those things.
Right. That's part of the making the sausage that people don't really like to see. And that is those analytical tools are used by various districts' representatives to bolster their case for their particular area of the state. But the letters to superintendents, that seems a different tactic.
It could. This is the first time that it's happened in my tenure as superintendent, especially when you're moving far along in a budget process that really is stretched into the next fiscal year. It may be uncharted waters for a long, long time.
How should school districts and superintendents respond to those letters?
Well, I think that what you want to do is get your local folks engaged to continue to push the message of the importance of K-12 education, the importance of getting a budget done, the importance of additional revenues to K-12 education. The problem we've got right now is you have so many factors at play. Our colleagues in the higher education systems are right now not receiving anything from the state. So that is a huge priority and certainly something that is important to all of us. We'll continue to push the message of increasing the revenues to K-12 education.
So stay on mission, in other words, and not engage and not get too far down in the weeds with any particular partisan question.
Right. We certainly have lobbying organizations that tend to focus on the issues, not the parties. And so support can be lended to a particular bill, to a particular funding formula over another. And that certainly will play out along certain political lines oftentimes. But to align with one particular party, that's just not in the best interest of us.
In Democratic Senate President John Cullerton's letter to superintendents, he said that real estate agents and tax assessors have more control over available resources than education experts, lawmakers, and the governor. That's obviously a reference to local property taxes. Is he saying go to the property tax to make up for the lack of state assistance?
Well, I think you'd have to ask him what he's referring to there. I think.
Well, how do you interpret it, though?
I'm hearing that, and I'd have to go back and look at that letter because it's been a little while since I've reviewed it. But I think he's saying that we rely too heavily on our property tax resources, and where a kid lives, depending on the zip code, there could be vast differences. And this is nothing new that I think most people aren't aware of. The examples that are the extremes that are given are the East St. Louis versus the New Trier's of the world, and the difference between the revenues that are brought in locally in one versus the other, and how detrimental that can be to one district over another. And the state doesn't make up the difference between the two.
But the $6,000 per year, whatever the basic student allowance per student allowance is this year or next year, is generally regarded as not enough.
Correct. And that number will be more, a little over $8,000, depending on what research you would look at.
So you go right back to the legislature.
You go right back there. And, you know, we're in a state that funds education dead last, or if not dead last, it's very much near the bottom. With a constitution that suggests or tells us that they're supposed to fund half of it, and that just isn't happening, and it hasn't been happening for a long, long time. So to be able to make up that difference, too much is relied upon property tax revenues. And of course, if you're in a wealthy community versus one that's not, it makes a big difference. The funding formulas that are out there, there's two that are really being discussed now. That you've got one from Senator Menar, you've got one from Senator Berkman. I can tell you that in general, I can't speak for every school district out there, but Senator Berkman's is a research-based model that talks about a funding formula that makes clear choices to lift up those who are in need, greater need than those of us who have better property tax wealth, without reducing those of us who are doing our part. And I'm not clear that the other one does that. And so as you look at a research-based formula, I think that people ought to become knowledgeable about that and learn a little bit about it. There's school finance is a very difficult thing to understand.
The school funding formula has been an issue as long as I've been reporting, and that is now more than 30 years. Right. It's always been a heavy, heavy political lift on its own, let alone in a year where they can't even agree on a budget. Are either of those proposals, Senator Jason Berkman of Bloomington's or Senator Andy Menar, Democrat of Bunker Hills, likely to go anywhere this year?
I don't foresee it happening right now, but who knows? Sometimes deals get struck at the 11th hour. My concern with that is sometimes you get something done that people will view as, okay, now we've solved it. So if there is a change in the funding formula and it's not the research model, then in my opinion, we've fallen short and we could be stuck with that for a long, long time because the political will to make that change doesn't come along very often. I'd rather get it right the first time. So I don't envision that it's going to happen, but I'm not naive to think that it couldn't happen.
Barry Riley is the superintendent of District 87 Schools. Thanks so much for joining us.
You bet. Thanks, Charlie.
I'm Charlie Schlenker.